Okay, covered the mafia.
That is really, I know, everybody goes, well, how do you cover the mafia? They don't have, like, open meetings.
So do you you figure out, how do I start this? How do I get myself involved? How did you do that?
So I started talking to law enforcement, FBI, local police. I did a lot of reading about who was who, and then, you know, things would happen. And so I'd write stories about them. Typically, most successful criminal organizations, and not just the mafia, but all criminal organizations, don't commit their crimes where they live. Their goal in life is to steal from other people or to sell products or whatever, but to not to do it where it's home. And so at some point, younger people join, the children, and then they start making mistakes and they start selling drugs or they start hijacking trucks or doing things in the hometown. And that usually turns out bad. And so, and then the police are made to look like they're incompetent. And so they get pissed off. And so you're waiting and looking for that battle to occur. And that was just starting to occur in Binghamton.
All right. So let me say, you must have come to the attention of the boss or bosses.
I did.
All right. So then let's back up and find out why. Why did you come to their attention? It was because you wrote stories. What kind of story brought them interested in you, made them interested in you?
Well, I think they were interested, but I think they got pissed off when I cost them money. And so I remember when it happened, there was a Frito-Lay plant in Binghamton, and it was either the laborers or the Teamsters were trying to organize the plant. And both of those locals, union locals, were pretty much mobbed up. They had members of the family in executive positions. And so I wrote this horrible story about all these people that were trying to gain control of this Frito-Lay plant. And they put it across the top of the front page. And so Frito-Lay, being no dummies, took that article and put it under everybody's windshield at the plant. And they lost the vote. And they were pissed. And it comes to you different ways. Mainly it comes from law enforcement who tell you, you did not make them happy. Just watch yourself. Or sometime somebody will drive by, you're walking on the street. I remember this very vividly. I'm walking downtown and I see someone pull up and they point their hand at me it's like a gun, and they click it a couple of times. And I know who they were, and so, you know, that was their way of doing it. And so I just didn't respond to all that because I figured if they really wanted to harm me, they would. And if they wanted just to try and intimidate me, that's different. And that's what they were trying to do. They were trying to intimidate me.
And it didn't work.
It didn't work, and then something changed it all. I wrote a story about the underboss's, Tony Guarneri's son, and he had been arrested for cocaine possession. It was typical, it wasn't much of a story. And Tony's son, he was Peter, called me at the office and threatened to kill me. And I'm listening to him, and I'm pretty sure he was high when he was screaming at me. So anyway, it's over, and I put the phone down, and then the phone rings again, and I pick it up again, and it's the FBI. Well, they had a tap on his phone, and they wanted to know whether I'd press charges against him for threatening to kill me. And I started laughing, and I go, no. I said, no, I'm just a reporter. Leave me alone. Well, the one thing I learned later was is these were FBI agents out of Newark. They were not in Binghamton. The agents in Binghamton knew me. I doubt they would have called me. But anyways, these guys did, and I said no. Well, somehow that got back to Mr. Guarneri. And he called me, and he just said, thank you. And that's the most he had ever said to me. He had never taken one of my calls around. And then later in life, toward the end, I was in that little town in Harrisburg covering the Pennsylvania Crime Commission. Their lawyer, Remo Alio, their consigliere, came over to me and he said, would you like to interview Mr. Guarneri and Mr. Buffalino? And I said, sure. And he goes, just stand here. And they all came in, all the guards, and Mr. Buffalino and Mr. Guarneri, and we sat in one of those little rickety plastic tables that always feels like it's going to fall apart. I asked him what I could ask him. They said, just ask. And we talked about lots of different things. And I wrote a story out of it. And, of course, it got me a grand jury subpoena from the feds to come and testify. We squashed it. We didn't have to go. But yeah, that was I'm fast forwarding through all my little activities covering the mob. But yeah, it was interesting. Mr. Guarneri is no bigger than me, and not an intimidating. But of course, later in life, they made a movie out of him about Hoffa, and then I guess it's who is it, De Niro, who plays the lead, not Buffalino. Buffalino's played by, he's played a variety of mob movies. But, yeah, he was...
The name of the movie.
Shoot, I got to remember it.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know off the top of my head.
When you said Mr. Guarneri called you and said thank you.
For not prosecuting, not cooperating with the FBI and putting his son in jail.
Okay.
Because he knew his son was pretty much out of control on drugs, and he was going to have to deal with it. It was that same period in that time within the La Cosa Nostra where, you know, Luciani, when he came to head the families, he allowed them to get into drugs, and there was still a lot of concern about that was going to create a lot of problems, which it did.
So what was the setting when you interviewed Mr. Guarneri and the other boss? What was his name again?
Buffalino.
Buffalino. Was that in jail? Was that in prison?
It is no different than what we're sitting at right now. I'm sitting at a table.
In prison?
In Harrisburg, I'm Pennsylvania. Sorry. They had just gone to the Pennsylvania Crime Commission and taken the fifth on everything, so they would not testify. And they were the head of the mafia. I had gone across the street to this little restaurant. I mean, it was kind of like a Wendy's. It was like a small restaurant. And I was using the phone, and that's when their lawyer, their consigliere, Remo came over and said, would you like to interview Mr. Guarneri and Mr. Buffalino? And I think it was all tied. I said that the fact that I had not taken the bait from the FBI and pressed charges on Mr. Guarneri's son. It all those things over probably a year period kind of transpire to say, so what are we going to do with him? They weren't going to hurt me because they knew that. And matter of fact, when I had my going away party in Binghamton, Remo and two very large men with bulges and on their waist came to it. I remember that because my brother John had come up to help me drive back to Tulsa. He goes, who is that? And I go, well, the guy in the chair is Remo Alio. He's the consigliere for the Buffalino crime family. And he goes, oh. That's why those two guys on either side of him have guns. And I go, yep, they do. I said, over here is the FBI, and over there is the Endicott Police, and over there is the Binghamton. And we were in a big American Legion hall. So it was fun.
You had the mob influence at your going away party.
Yep, they were there.
Okay, then you didn't have time to prepare yourself for this interview. Mm-mm. I mean, bingo, they're here, sit down, let's do it.
Right.
So then what did you want them to confess to everything they did, or how did you, what kind of questions did
you
ask?
I asked them all the same questions that the Crime Commission asked them, and they again said, no, thank you. And then I was struggling. I was trying to figure out what, and I says, all right, we'll change it. What's your favorite Italian restaurant in Binghamton? And that kind of opened them up. So they started talking about that. And then I started saying, well, who's your favorite judge? And they said, you can't write it. And I said, okay. So they told me who their favorite judges were. And that's what got me in trouble. Because at the end of the story, I put a paragraph. This was a mistake. I said, they also talked with me about who their favorite other elected officials were. And I didn't say any. And so the Fed...
You named them?
No, I didn't. No. And so the feds wanted to get me in front of the grand jury to detail which ones they told me. And we had to go to court to quash the subpoena.
You didn't have to... Does this come under the category of... A reporter does not have to divulge
unless it's a criminal act. Right. So there was no accusation, because they didn't know who it was. There was no accusation that anybody that I was writing about in there had committed a criminal act.
Right, and you couldn't prove it. So the judge and others had to be on the take.
Correct.
From the mob.
That's correct.
And you knew who they were.
That's correct. That's what I wanted to know. And they, to be honest with you, the mafia did not, and I think particularly the upper echelons of the mafia, they had no respect for those judges. They utilized them, but they had no respect for them.
So even the mafia has their set of ethics.
They do.
And they didn't respect the judges, even though they got them to do pretty much what they wanted them to do.
That's correct.
They looked down upon them as they were using them. Did you ever try to confront any of those people?
Nope.
Why?
I didn't have anything to do it because they'd given it to me in confidence. It was just something I would watch for. So if I saw a judge, doing something, I would probably pay a little bit more closer attention to the case to find out if they were going to. And then if I could figure out a way to write about it without giving up my sources, yeah. And I would do things like that.
But wasn't it great? You had a newspaper publisher and an editor and all that supported you through all this. Did anybody say, hey, you got to be careful, you got to back off or stop or anything?
So there had been a person that had done this before, Dave Mack, and Dave had eventually decided he needed to be paid, and so he went to work for Governor Kerry in Albany, and so the position was open. And nobody else wanted it at the newspaper, so that's why they recruited outside of Binghamton for me to come cover the mob. Yeah, it is one of the more, it's probably the most, it's the area that most people are interested in when they hear my journalism. The other one would be a lot of people like to talk about the white supremacists and I got to write about them
right,
later.
But the subscriptions for the readership to that newspaper had to just been off the charts.
Well, maybe and maybe not. I mean, you do get a little bit of activity there. This is an afternoon, the Binghamton Evening Press. It was an afternoon newspaper again. And at this point, all the afternoon newspapers are just struggling. And so the Oklahoma City Times was gone. Then I went to work for the Evening Press. It's gone. And then, of course, I went to work for the Tulsa Tribune eventually. And so I'm kind of like the stalker of death around afternoon newspapers.
Right.